Welcome to ACT Radio, Animal Concerns of Texas. I'm Greg Lawson.
And I'm Tom Linney.
Here on ACT, we talk about how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
We also talk about how a plant-based diet is the best thing one can do for one's health and for the environment.
So if you're concerned about the environment, if you're concerned about your health, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas. Coming up on today's show, we feature a conversation with acclaimed cardiologist and author Dr. Joel Kahn. That's a little later in the show, but first some news.
Three billboards surrounding U.S. Army Medical Command in San Antonio and sponsored by the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, a national nonprofit of more than 12,000 physicians, criticized the Army for using outdated medical training methods. The ads depict a goat in an Army combat uniform, chewing on blades of grass, with the words, "Goats make lousy soldiers. End animal use for military medical training." The U.S. Army continues to use animals for combat medic training, even though training methods specifically modeled after humans are widely available and accepted to be equivalent or superior to animal training methods, even within the military. Physician and former Army Major Robert DeMuth said, "There are significant anatomical and physiological differences between species, making human-relevant non-animal training the only reasonable track forward. Furthermore, modern training methods allow for immersive training experiences. Actors can wear what's called a cut suit, which features breakable bones and artificial blood to provide a realistic training experience on a casualty compared to what medics can expect to encounter in the field. However, in Army combat medic training courses, goats or pigs are stabbed and burned and have their limbs amputated with tree trimmers. Animals that survive these injuries are killed after the training session. The Army refers to this activity as live tissue training." The Physicians Committee submitted a letter to Lieutenant General Nadja West, MD, Surgeon General of the U.S. Army and Commanding General of the U.S. Army Medical Command, requesting that animals be replaced in Army combat medic training.
Many critical laws protecting animals, including those regulating factory farms and preventing the sale of dog meat, are in danger. Representative Steve King of Iowa is trying to pass the so-called States' Rights Elimination Act, which would undo many of the legislative victories you've achieved for animal protection. Representative King hopes to take away your state's ability to enact animal welfare laws protecting animals and consumers from food produced in unsafe conditions. Representative King tried to pass similar legislation a few years ago, and animal advocates like you fought back. Congress needs to hear from you again. To make sure your message is heard, please visit ALDF.org.
On February the 5th, the National Research Watchdog Group, Stop Animal Exploitation Now, SANE, urged that two Texas-based research facilities, the University of Texas MD Anderson in Houston and Texas Biomedical Research Institute in San Antonio, should have all chimpanzee research subjects removed from their facilities as soon as possible. SANE, an Ohio-based nonprofit watchdog that monitors U.S. research facilities for illegal activities and animal abuse, said federal reports reveal MD Anderson Center negligence boiled one monkey alive and fatally overdosed a rabbit and drowned four mice. SANE said the Texas Biomedical Research Institute negligence has killed multiple animals while violating the Animal Welfare Act 17 times in the last 2 years, which launched a sweeping federal investigation. A September 2017 U.S. Department of Agriculture inspection of MD Anderson Center cited the laboratory for a rabbit death caused by an almost tenfold chemical overdose. The boiling alive of a monkey was documented in a March 2017 report. Michael A. Budke, SANE's co-founder, said, This type of negligence exhibited by the University of Texas MD Anderson facility is enough to make anyone wonder if they should be allowed to house or work with animals at all. The University of Texas MD Anderson Center currently receives $2.5 million annually in federal funds to manage the chimpanzees.
Stay with us. Coming up next is a conversation with Dr. Joel Kahn, one of the world's top cardiologists. Dr. Kahn is the founder of the Kahn Center for Cardiac Longevity and is a professor of medicine at Wayne State University School of Medicine. His books, The Whole Heart Solution, Dead Execs Don't Get Bonuses, and Vegan Sex are all number one bestsellers. He lectures widely on the cardiac benefits of vegan nutrition, mind-body practices, and heart attack prevention. That's next on Animal Concerns of Texas. Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas is Dr. Joel Kahn. Thanks for being with us so much.
My pleasure. My roots are in Texas, and one of my kids born there, so always a pleasure to reconnect.
Oh, cool. We usually start off our show by asking our guests, what turned you over to a vegan diet?
Yeah, it was a long ago and really rather random, but now very purposeful, very briefly. First day, undergraduate, University of Michigan, dormitory, cafeteria, saw the salad. This is a true story. Saw the salad bar. My girlfriend, who's been my wife now for almost four decades, had the same reaction. We're salad bar people. That was the title. We're salad bar-itarians. And I was into medical school early in age and soon started hearing occasionally about nutrition. You know, like everybody says, you don't hear much. But then some angel, and this is another part of the story that's true, handed me the book A Diet for a New America by John Robbins right when it came out. And I took it on vacation. I don't know who that person is. I don't have that copy anymore. I rebought a new copy. And it just sealed the deal. Man, there's some data here on animals, on the environment, even early health data. I just didn't know and certainly didn't get lectures in medical school. So it's been four decades of, you know, my last burger, hot dog, and pepperoni pizza. I don't know that I ever ate a pepperoni pizza. It was 40 years ago. So it's been all good and very purely vegan lifestyle now.
Wow. Well, you're a very well-respected cardiologist now. I'm curious about, so you were in medical school, you didn't get much on nutrition. What happened when you were thinking about practicing? How much was veganism on your mind or plant-based nutrition? Was it an important part of what you were wanting to include in your practice when you first started?
Well, it was interesting, again, and just coincidence. I started practice July 1, 1990. I had trained in Dallas for 3 years, but I'm from Michigan, came back July 1, 1990. I was a balloon guy, a heart attack guy. I'm in your cath lab at 3 in the morning to take care of you guy. And 3 weeks later, July 21, 1990, is when Dr. Dean Ornish of San Francisco published the first really prominent paper, you could reverse established heart disease with a plant-based diet, meditation, walking, and group support. But the nutrition piece was huge, and I mean, I read it the day it came out. We had these things nobody knows of anymore called journals that came to your mailbox. There was no internet back then, and you know, wow. So I had about 3 weeks where I only had a balloon, and then after 3 weeks, I said, this diet we've been doing seems to have amazing power. So I've been teaching it to patients since, and you know, if they were on my cath lab table, it's a real good time to catch their attention that the next trip to the cath lab will depend if you're eating beans or beef. I suggest you eat beans, and you know, pretty much anywhere I can, I've been talking about it since.
I was thinking this morning when I was reading some of your articles about lectins in things like beans and grains, and it's such a big thing now that people are saying, oh, they're bad for you. How do you feel about the controversy there?
Yeah, lectins, L-E-C-T-I-N-S,
lectins.
This idea that plants have a what some men called an anti-nutrient or a defense system for predators, and that we're just a giant predator. Now, I think that's part of the message. We're a lot bigger than a praying mantis or a little bird, and there may be some potency to the, you know, to the bitter flavor of a seed or something, but in reality, this concept, mainly promoted by one cardiac surgeon in Desert Palm, California, Dr. Steve Gundry, that our health is suffering by eating foods. Now, lectins are protein-binding carbohydrates. They're in animals. They're in hundreds of plants. They happen to be concentrated a bit more in legumes, beans, peas, lentils, and that's the food group that gets a hit in this. There's people that are scared of eating beans, peas, and lentils. When indeed, if you look at the longest-lived people in the world, not vegans, just people living to 100-plus in good health, so-called blue zones, the only food that's in common amongst the blue zones is legumes, is beans, peas, lentils. They're a longevity food. And, you know, native populations know that you don't eat raw beans. You don't see people munching on raw lentils. At the worst, you might get an upset stomach, some diarrhea. You're not going to die if you did. Dr. Gundry claims you'll die immediately if you eat raw red kidney beans. It's simply not true. So he also sells the beautiful lectin blocker at $85 a bottle. You know, you don't need a lectin blocker. You need to eat peas, beans, lentils. You need to pressure cook them or buy a nice brand that's been cooked in a can. Soak them, sprout them, then, you know, cook them appropriately till they're soft. You know, people that eat beans know when beans are ready to eat, and they're health food. So it's the latest scare tactic. That gluten was the first wave. Sugar's a scare tactic. It's clearly not good for you, but it also isn't as evil as that one grain of sugar is going to make you diabetic or age. I mean, yes, you need to limit sugar. We all do. It's everywhere.
Right. Well, you know, I'm just going back to you. You know, you just briefly hit on the idea of how prevalent heart disease and heart attacks are in this country, and the amount of people that undergo serious surgery for it. And I mean, and you know, if someone who's, I think all of us have had some family member or friend who's been impacted by it. But it's really, I mean, the surgery. And I'm not a medical person by any means, but the surgery is just so. I mean, it's just an outstanding, I mean, it's an amazing process, but it just requires so much. And I think it's really, and you watch people recover.
Plunging my toilet is an amazing process, too. And they both should be avoided, bypass surgery and plunging as much as possible. Yeah, I've been in the operating room. I did stents, not the open heart. It's a miracle.
Yeah.
And clearly, people need it.
But
about maybe 5 to 10% of the number of people that actually get it need it, according to the strictest of scientific criteria. Because
wow.
They don't hear. They've never heard who's Dr. Ornish, who's Dr. Esselstyn. Here's an informed consent that says you could try lifestyle for 90% of those people. They just never hear about it. A few smart ones get on their cell phone, and they actually check themselves out of the hospital because they find a lecture by Dr. Esselstyn or something I wrote, and they explore it. And for some of them, that's appropriate. For some of them, you know, you need to guide them back. You're really in trouble, and you need to get the surgery. Then we can work on lifestyle. I mean, we can't be ridiculous about the whole thing. But, yeah, it's amazing, but it's just time for it to be cut down dramatically in frequency.
Yeah, well, I think that's where I was going with it, is it's just such a, I mean, it's really just a labor-intensive process and scary. But for so many people, in some ways, it's almost scarier for them just to think about changing their diet.
So it's true.
I think
it's hard. It takes commitment, focus. You have to be a real hero and a real pioneer to say, I will eat perfect. I will monitor it. I will, you know, do all that I need to do. And there's many other things in the integrative world you can add to that plant-perfect diet without added oils to help. But it takes a pioneer because the medical system is going to pressure them. You're going to die. And a right. few, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 100 might. But the majority are just as well off taking a diet-based approach for sure.
Right.
I'm reminded of the movie What the Health, which seems to have the message that the medical profession and the pharmaceutical industry are interested in selling their products as opposed to putting people on a proper lifestyle path.
Well, you know, it is. You just imagine. There are statistics that we could drop heart attack risk, number one cause of death in America, men and women, by 85% with lifestyle, a big portion of which is plant-based nutrition. It's not the only portion. You got to walk. You can't smoke. Got to stay thin. Got to sleep. I mean, imagine what would happen to a hospital if 85% of cardiac patients stopped showing up. They would close, which it really is what needs to happen, a re-downsizing and big wellness centers, small hospitals for car accidents and the person that doesn't respond to lifestyle. But, yeah, it really does threaten, which is why I have two major hospitals I practice in Detroit. And if I walk in the lobby of one, I can buy a Wendy's Baconator at the Wendy's and a Chick-fil-A right next to it. And in the other hospital, I can go into the Wahlburgers and get a triple burger, government cheese, mayo burger right in the lobby of the hospital because, you know, propagating illness and raising money from inappropriate sources like that are still part of the system. And, you know, people just need to scream, but doctors are employed by hospitals nowadays, and I'm an unusual one that isn't, and I can afford to be a bit outlandish. But most have to watch your backside because you can get fired for being openly critical.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, I think I'm curious, too, what kind of early detection is there? So, you know, for a lot of our listeners, a lot of people avoid the doctor at all costs because they're afraid they're going to get bad news. But maybe from a proactive or preventative standpoint, what are some of the things that you can do early on?
Most important question you just asked. So real quick, lifestyle-wise, don't smoke, walk 30 to 40 minutes a day, eat more than 5 servings of fruit and vegetables a day, keep your waist thin, sleep 7 hours a night, and if you don't have a problem with it, enjoy a little bit of alcohol during your life in a social and loving way. That's science, not stuff that I make up. That drops your risk of heart attack by 85%. But the last answer is, you're in the state of Texas. There's an amazing movie called The Widowmaker. It's on, you know, social media, The Widowmaker. It's not brand new. Hmm. It talks about a test called a heart CT scan. And in the state of Texas, every citizen gets that as a covered benefit at age 50 if they're smart enough to know and ask for it. Not in my state. In Michigan, you have to pay, but it's $70 out of pocket. It's not covered by insurance. In Texas, it is. This is a CAT scan of the heart, no IV, no pain, no iodine, no exercise. Takes about 15 seconds.
Wow.
Do it all the major hospitals. You get a number. If that number comes back zero, you go out, you have green juice and sprouts, and you celebrate. Don't go to Sonny Bryan's barbecue across from Parkland Hospital in Dallas. If you come out 1,000, that means your arteries are riddled with problem. You need to get to a preventive specialist and find out what can I do to change my lifestyle and get rid of this plaque. So a heart calcium CT scan available in every state in the United States, $70, $45, $100. But in the state of Texas, it's actually covered benefit, which is just awesome. Wish we're like that everywhere.
Right. One of the things that I've read about through your work is you know, the notion of conscious eating. And I'm curious what exactly you mean by that and perhaps what are some of the good habits of it?
Yeah, you know, we're conscious, mindful eating. We're in a rush. We grab in food without thinking. This is fuel for my body. We spend more time picking what gas we're going to get, standard, middle, or premium, then we probably pick, you know, a lot of times for the family, for ourselves, at a vending machine and a cafeteria and such. So mindful is to at least be aware that truly food is medicine. Food is information for the body for illness or for health. And skipping a meal if there's poor options, just picking the salad bar if there's poor options, like I did for several years in that dormitory, is important. Another is slowing down, chewing, mindful, kind of eating, sitting, not standing, not in your car in a yellow bag, because we do eat way too many calories. And if you slow down, are mindful, chew purposely, it's better for your digestion. You also eat less food during the day to be mindful in that way. So there's about 700 or 800 extra calories a day most of us are eating that, you know, a mindful approach. Am I really hungry? Am I grabbing that bagel? Am I grabbing that donut that's sitting by the coffee pot because I need it or because I'm stressed and it just reminds me of the nipple my mom used to give me, which is a lot of it, you know, the pacifier may be a more appropriate word. Mindfulness is it applies to lots in life. It certainly is one of the most important clues for food.
Yeah, I'll definitely stop eating donuts over my kitchen sink now.
There you go.
Take a break.
Yeah. You don't need to eat sitting on the toilet. I mean, that's just wrong. Be mindful.
Yeah. I lay on the couch and watch TV with a bag of chips. I need to stop that, too.
You're best off to keep a bowl of, like, you know, oranges and apples and tangerines on the kitchen counter, because if they're in the crisper, you don't see them. The bag of bean chips is just easier to grab. I agree with you.
I think you touched on the fact that, you know, our lifestyles have changed in today's world. It's go, 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 go. And I'm wondering if that was sort of the concept behind your book, Dead Execs Don't Get Bonuses. What brought you to writing that? And you know, what's the goal in creating that book?
Yeah, so I was asked to give a lecture about 4 years ago to a pretty high-level group of marketing people, people like Tony Robbins in the room and such, and they said, you got 10 minutes, it's timed, there's a clock on the wall, you're the cardiologist, you know, and the deal is you got to tell us something that makes us $250,000 in the next 12 months, so it has to be powerful, a marketing tip, a business tip. So, well, you know, what the heck can I tell you other than if you're alive, you'll do that. These were people that could do that easily. And if you're dead, you know, it's not going to happen. So I went through real quick, best blood test, best diet, and that heart CT scan so that they would be there in a year from now. And that kind of resonated with that title, Dead Execs Don't Get Bonuses, enough that that became a book, and that became kind of my platform. And it's real. I'll just tell you real quick. The president of the American Heart Association, who's chief of cardiology at University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center in Dallas, where I train, 52-year-old, good-looking guy, gives a big lecture in November in Anaheim, California. Thousands of cardiologists. The future is prevention. We need to focus on prevention. 52 years old. Goes back to his hotel room that morning, has a cardiac arrest from a heart attack 2 hours after his lecture at age 52. Thank God his daughter and his wife knew CPR. The hotel had a AED automatic defibrillator right there. And he came back to life and had his emergency stent out of town, and he's back to work. But if you're 52 years old, you're chairman of the Department of Cardiology and president of the American Heart Association for the world, and you don't know that you're walking around with plaque, we need a different system. And that's what Dead Execs Don't Get Bonuses is say at age 40, 45, wake-up call, find out if you're a zero on that CT scan, or find out if you're a 400 and you are, if not a walking time bomb, but you've got serious problem. You need to be wraparound love on, you know, your biochemistry, your diet, your stress, your genetics, anything that we have.
Right. And if you don't want to change your diet because of the animal cruelty involved or the horrible environmental impacts, at the very least, you want to try and change your diet and, you know, pass on the piece of bacon in the hopes of, you know, spending more time with your grandkids or enjoying your retirement or so many of the other things that I think people forego, I think, in exchange for, you know, momentary, I guess, bliss for them when it comes to food choices.
Absolutely true. You want that kind of Dr. Dean Ornish is famous for saying long term, people do not change habits out of fear. They might in the short run. Long run, they're going to do it out of goals, which see a grandkid get married, retire, buy a house on a beach. You know, that's what's going to get them motivated. And it takes good health. There's a statement, a person with good health has 1,000 dreams. A person with poor health has only one dream, to get their health back. So it's a very powerful statement.
Wow. To live beyond Christmas Day seems to be a large goal for a lot of people who die in early January.
Yeah.
It seems some of the biggest challenges are that young people think they're never going to die, and old people think it's too late to do anything about improving their health.
Yeah, there's some, certainly that gets back perhaps to that mindful statement of, you know, what gets people focused and being mindful that we are here for a short period of time. We have this amazing human body that it's absolutely remarkable if it works one day in our life, let alone almost every day, but we don't focus on it and sense of awareness, mindfulness, and gratitude. But, you know, be proactive. Take the best care you can. Self-care, I always say, know your grocer, know your farmer's market owner better than you know your doctor. Your health will likely be better. But you got to get checked. You got to get tested. And similarly, at the other end of life, remarkable improvements in health in your 70s, 80s, and 90s. It's never too late to eat an anti-inflammatory plant-based weight controlling diet that's good for the brain, the blood sugar, the blood pressure, sexual organs, heart organs. Never too late to adopt new habits.
Yeah, and in terms of practical advice, real quick, Joel, I'm wondering if you could tell us, you know, what you think are some things that all people should have in their pantry for a better year and a better health.
Yeah, you know, you do want to have a nice, I would prefer you get organic black beans, kidney beans, cannellini beans, chickpeas. Get them in cans that don't have BPA, that plastic lining that can affect your endocrine system. Have a whole bunch. So you can throw them together, make a quick chili, make some tacos, make some enchiladas. You know, eat them. Make your own homemade hummus would be great out of the chickpeas, a wonderful dip, particularly if you make your own. That's a no-brainer. You know, I'm a little wary of rice all of a sudden. There's arsenic in rice.
Yeah.
Basmati may be the best, but you know, learn how to cook quinoa, learn how to make millet and buckwheat. These all come pre prepared boxes that you just got to boil up, heat up, easy to go, because you want some good grains. I love having a big bin of purple potatoes, sweet potatoes, and even good old Idaho white potatoes. You know, bake them up a whole bunch at once, and they're a grab-and-go meal on the go. Big, beautiful yam that's been baked. That's a no-brainer. Lots of fresh spices. And by fresh, I mean they can be in the glass jar, but not 10 years old as a high school graduation present when you're in your mid-40s. And a lot of us have, you know, rosemary that's been sitting there forever.
Right,
so
right.
About once a year, renew your spices and use them. I mean, turmeric is the king.
Oh,
turmeric.
Yeah.
Makes your brain better. Rosemary helps your memory. Ginger is an antioxidant if you've got some joint pain. A wonderful one. And garlic fresh, garlic powder, garlic flakes. Very, very important source of something called sulfur that helps your immune system during these challenging winter months where a lot of people are getting sick.
Yep. Joel, can you tell us where our listeners can go to learn more about your work?
Well, that's kind of you. Yeah, I have a pretty active website, drjoelkahn.com, but that's drjoelkahn.com, drjoelkahn.com. I have a new book out just recently that's there, The Plant-Based Solution, and lots of fun articles and free videos. So I have an active clinical practice. I also own a soon-to-be two restaurants in Detroit that are plant-based havens, so I'm a pretty busy guy, but I put it all there on that website to make it easy to find.
We've been talking with acclaimed cardiologist and author, Dr. Joel Kahn. Thanks for being with us, Dr. Joel.
Oh, thanks so much.
Thanks. If you would like to learn more about a plant-based diet, please visit the Vegetarian Society of El Paso's website at vsep.org. There you will find a calendar of events which list all our upcoming activities.
And if you'd like to listen to some of the past shows of ACT Radio, you can find them at ktep.org. Just click on the listen button. Until next time, I'm Tom Linney.
And I'm Greg Lawson. For the animals, the earth, and a healthier humanity, thanks for listening to ACT Radio.